an ego poem, which is like a prayer, and I'm reading this tonight for Bill Volker and his parents, Evelyn and Bob Volker, who know the Eagles. To pray, you open your whole self to sky, to earth, to sun, to moon, to one whole voice that is you, and know there is more that you can't see, can't feel, can't hear, except in moments steadily growing, and in languages that aren't always sound, but other circles of motion, like eagle that Sunday morning over Salt River, circled in blue sky, in wind, swept our hearts clean with sacred wings. We see you, see ourselves, and know that we must take the utmost care and kindness in all things. Breathe in, knowing we are made of all this, and breathe, knowing we are truly blessed because we were born and die soon within a true circle of motion, like eagle rounding out the morning inside us. We pray that it will be done in beauty, in beauty. I'm going to read a few from She Had Some Horses and then get into some newer ones and then come back. This one poem is called White Bear. And I wrote this poem. It was shortly after Mount St. Helens was set off in Washington State. And I was on a flight to Albuquerque. I think I changed flights in Denver. And on the flight, it was late at night, and I could hear some women talking about how they had just flown over Mount St. Helens, and they were really excited because they got to see the eruption. And so I was really tired, and I'd started to go to sleep on the plane, and I had this dream. It was kind of a half-dream sleep, and I saw this white bear coming down from the north. It was the image I had. And so I wrote this poem, and it wasn't until probably about 2 or 3 years after I'd written the poem that I found out actually where the white bear came from, because I don't always know where things come from in my poems. And I picked up a copy of Akwesasne Notes, which is a major international, at this point, tribal newspaper, and saw some prophecies, Creek prophecies. Now, you don't usually see Creek prophecies written down. You know, you can Hopi prophecies, yes, but rarely Creek prophecies. And they're usually kept pretty secret. But Philip Deer felt that it was time, because of such events like Mount St. Helens, that they be allowed to be written down. So in the Creek prophecies, in a very beautiful metaphorical language, he talked about the white bear coming down from the north. And then I knew where it came from. So it's white bear. She begins to board the flight to Albuquerque late night, but stops in the corrugated tunnel, a space between leaving and staying where the night sky catches. Her whole life, she has felt like a woman balancing on a wooden nickel heart, approaching herself from here to there, Tulsa or New York, with knives or cornmeal. The last flight, someone talked about how coming from Seattle, the pilot flew a circle over Mount St. Helens. She sat quiet, but had seen the eruption as the earth beginning to come apart, as in birth, out of violence. She watches the yellow lights of towns below the airplane flicker, fade, and fall backwards. Somewhere she dreamed there is the white bear, moving down from the north, motioning her paws like a long Arctic night. That kind of circle and the whole world balanced in between, carved of ebony and ice. Oh, so hard, the clear black nights like her daughter's eyes, and the white bare moon, cupped like an ivory rocking cradle, tipping back, it could go either way, All darkness is open to all light. Okay, this one. This one's called New Orleans. And this poem I wrote, it was the first time I had ever been into the Deep South. And some of my family and my Creek side comes from around Alabama, and it was the closest I'd been. So as I walked around the streets of New Orleans, I was looking for other Creeks. And I walked down to the Mississippi River and sat there for a long time listening to the boats go up and down and trying to hook into some kind of memory because I knew it was there. And I started remembering a story about this guy named DeSoto. I don't know why I started remembering about him, but I remember being taught in elementary school about him, you know, coming to this country and looking for gold. And what I remembered was that either he was drowned in the Mississippi River or he was killed and his body was thrown in the Mississippi River. And the way I remembered it was that either the Chickasaws or the Choctaws did it. But I used my poetic license and I said the Creeks did it. Because I figured they must have had a hand in it, or at least they were thinking about it too. So this is New Orleans. This is the South. I look for evidence of other creeks, for remnants of voices, or for tobacco brown bones to come wandering down Conti Street, Royal, or Decatur. Near the French Market, I see a blue horse caught frozen in stone. Brought in by the Spanish on an endless ocean voyage, he became mad and crazy. They caught him in Blue Rock, said, "Don't talk." I know it wasn't just a horse that went crazy. Nearby is a shop with ivory and knives. There are red rocks. The man behind the counter has no idea that he is inside magic stones. He should find out before they destroy him. These things have memory, you know. I have a memory. It swims deep in blood, a delta in the skin. It swims out of Oklahoma, deep the Mississippi River, carries my feet to these places, the French Quarter, stale rooms, the sun behind thick and moist clouds, and I hear boats hauling themselves up and down the river. My spirit comes here to drink. My spirit comes here to drink. Blood is the undercurrent. There are voices buried in the Mississippi mud. There are ancestors and future children buried beneath the current stirred up by pleasure boats going up and down. There are stories here made of memory. I remember DeSoto. He is buried somewhere in this river, his bones sunk. Like the golden treasure he traveled half the earth to find. Came looking for gold cities, for shining streets of beaten gold to dance on with silk ladies. He should have stayed home. Creeks knew of him for miles before he came into town, dreamed of silver blades and crosses, and knew he was one of the ones who yearned for something his heart wasn't big enough to handle. And DeSoto thought it was gold. The Creeks lived in earth towns, not gold. Spun children, not gold. That's not what DeSoto thought he wanted to see. The Creeks knew it and drowned him in the Mississippi River so he wouldn't have to drown himself. Maybe his body is what I am looking for as evidence to know in another way that my memory is alive. But he must have got away somehow, because I have seen New Orleans, the lace and silk buildings, trolley cars on beaten silver paths, graves that rise up out of soft earth in the rain, shops that sell black mammy dolls holding white babies. And I know I have seen DeSoto having a drink on Bourbon Street, mad and crazy, dancing with a woman as gold as the river bottom. Thank you. That's old DeSoto. He gets around. I think I even saw him today. Okay, this one, it's called The Woman Hanging from the 13th Floor Window. And this poem came from an image that stayed with me for a long time after I went to the Chicago Indian Center a few years back, years ago. I guess it's been that long. And the Indian Center was pretty bleak. You know, there wasn't a lot of money. There was not money to buy curtains or to make it look warm. But the one touch in it that stayed with me for a long time and probably is what set off the poem in some way is the memory of a rocking chair in a room, because the chair was so round and the sun was going down and it looked pretty bleak. So for a few years after I came back, sometimes I would see that rocking chair, and soon I began to see this woman in this rocking chair. And then the poem came, and it was really strange because, well, I do a lot of revision when I write, and this poem seemed to come almost the way I revise, but not as heavily as I would have usually have to. And I kept feeling like it was one of these poems where you keep turning around and thinking someone's standing behind you, and it wasn't written at midnight, which some of them are, at 1 or 2 or in the morning or even at 5, but it was in the afternoon. So it was after I wrote the poem and read it and it first appeared in print, people would come up and say, you know, I heard that story or I knew that woman, and it was always a different story. You know, it was always in a different part of the country. So she must be several. Anyway, here's the woman hanging from the 13th floor window. She is the woman hanging from the 13th floor window. Her hands are pressed white against the concrete molding of the tenement building. She hangs from the 13th floor window in East Chicago with a swirl of birds over her head. They could be a halo or a storm of glass waiting to crush her. She thinks she will be set free. The woman hanging from the 13th floor window on the east side of Chicago is not alone. She is a woman of children, of the baby, Carlos, and of Margaret, and of Jimmy, who is the oldest. She is her mother's daughter and her father's son. She is several pieces between the two husbands she has had. She is all the women of the apartment building who stand watching her, watching themselves. When she was young, she ate wild rice on scraped down plates in warm wood rooms. It was in the farther north, and she was the baby then. They rocked her. She sees Lake Michigan lapping at the shores of herself. It is a dizzy hole of water, and the rich live in tall glass houses at the edge of it. In some places, Lake Michigan speaks softly. Here, it just sputters and butts itself against the asphalt. She sees other buildings just like hers. She sees other women hanging from many-floored windows, counting their lives in the palms of their hands and in the palms of their children's hands. She is the woman hanging from the 13th floor window on the Indian side of town. Her belly is soft from her children's births. Her worn Levi's swing down below her waist, and then her feet, and then her heart. She is dangling. The woman hanging from the 13th floor hears voices. They come to her in the night when the lights have gone dim. Sometimes they are little cats mewing and scratching at the door. Sometimes they are her grandmother's voice. And sometimes they are gigantic men of light whispering to her to get up, to get up, to get up. That's when she wants to have another child to hold on to in the night, to be able to fall back into dreams. And the woman hanging from the 13th floor window hears other voices. Some of them scream out from below for her to jump. They would push her over. Others cry softly from the sidewalks, pull their children up like flowers and gather them into their arms. They would help her like themselves. But she is the woman hanging from the 13th floor window, and she knows she is hanging by her own fingers, her own skin, her own thread of indecision. She thinks of Carlos, of Margaret, of Jimmy. She thinks of her father and of her mother. She thinks of all the women she has been, of all the men. She thinks of the color of her skin and of Chicago streets and of waterfalls and pines. She thinks of moonlight nights and of cool spring storms. Her mind chatters like neon in Northside bars. She thinks of the 4 a.m. lonelinesses that have folded her up like death, discordant, without logical and beautiful conclusion. Her teeth break off at the edges. She would speak. The woman hangs from the 13th floor window, crying for the lost beauty of her own life. She sees the sun falling west over the gray plain of Chicago. She thinks she remembers listening to her own life break loose as she falls from the 13th floor window on the east side of Chicago, or as she climbs back up to claim herself again. Thank you. Well, I'd like to think she climbs back up. Okay, this one's called She Had Some Horses, and I never know how to introduce this one, so I'll just read it. She had some horses. She had horses who were bodies of sand. She had horses who were maps drawn of blood. She had horses who were skins of ocean water. She had horses who were the blue air of sky. She had horses who were fur and teeth. She had horses who were clay and would break. She had horses who were splintered red cliff. She had some horses. She had horses with long pointed breasts. She had horses with full brown thighs. She had horses who laughed too much. She had horses who threw rocks at glass houses. She had horses who licked razor blades. She had some horses. She had horses who danced in their mother's arms. She had horses who thought they were the sun, and their bodies shone and burned like stars. She had horses who waltzed nightly on the moon. She had horses who were much too shy and kept quiet in stalls of their own making. She had some horses. She had horses who liked creek stomp dance songs. She had horses who cried in their beer. She had horses who spit at male queens who made them afraid of themselves. She had horses who said they weren't afraid. She had horses who lied. She had horses who told the truth, who were stripped bare of their tongues. She had some horses. She had horses who called themselves horse. She had horses who called themselves spirit and kept their voices secret and to themselves. She had horses who had no names. She had horses who had books of names. She had some horses. She had horses who whispered in the dark, who were afraid to speak. She had horses who screamed out of fear of the silence, who carried knives to protect themselves from ghosts. She had horses who waited for destruction. She had horses who waited for resurrection. She had some horses. She had horses who got down on their knees for any savior. She had horses who thought their high price had saved them. She had horses who tried to save her and climbed in her bed at night and prayed as they raped her. She had some horses. She had some horses she loved. She had some horses she hated. These were the same horses. Thank you. This last poem is called I Give You Back. And I wrote this poem to get rid of fear once and for all. I say, fear go away, don't ever bother me again. But we'll see what happens. I give you back. I release you, my beautiful and terrible fear. I release you. You are my beloved and hated twin. But now I don't know you as myself. I release you with all the pain I would know at the death of my children. You are not my blood anymore. I give you back to the soldiers who burned down my home, beheaded my children, raped and sodomized my brothers and sisters. I give you back to those who stole the food from our plates when we were starving. I release you, fear, because you hold these scenes in front of me, and I was born with eyes that can never close. I release you, fear, so you can no longer keep me naked and frozen in the winter or smothered under blankets in the summer. I release you. I release you. I release you. I release you. I am not afraid to be angry. I am not afraid to rejoice. I am not afraid to be white. I am not afraid to be black. I am not afraid to be hungry. I am not afraid to be full. I am not afraid to be hated. I am not afraid to be loved, to be loved, to be loved, fear. Oh, you have choked me, but I gave you the leash. You have gutted me, but I gave you the knife. You have devoured me, but I laid myself across the fire. I take myself back, fear. You are not my shadow any longer. I won't hold you in my hands. You can't live in my eyes, my ears, my voice, my belly, or in my heart. But come here, fear. I am alive, and you are so afraid of dying. Thank you.